This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Is the world actually cooling? Are scientists involved in a conspiracy to control your life? It's a fight to the finish at the Select Committee hearing on the state of climate science, December 2, 2009. Chairman Ed Markey of Massachusetts at the helm, Republican Representative Jim Sensenbrenner of Wisconsin as denier-in-chief. Caught up in the crossfire, Dr. John Holdren, President Obama's science advisor, and Dr. Jane Lubchenco, head of the National Ocean and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA. This all follows the so-called Climate Gate, where emails stolen from a British climate research facility drew fanatic newspaper reports from the usual suspects at the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Times. You'll hear calls for a congressional investigation of the emails of British climate scientists. Scientists are labeled fascists and McCarthyites. I'm your referee, Alex Smith, from Radio EcoShock. When you hear that bell, I'm jumping to a new clip from the hearings. We'll be done with your audio highlights in less than half an hour, but you can download the whole hour and 40-something minutes from our website, ecoshock.org. We enter the fight in progress with Washington State Representative Jay Inslee.
And we were talking about this issue, and this young man stood up, and he was a global climate change denier, and he was having field day with some email language that he thought showed some massive conspiracy by the Trilateral Commission or something to take over the Earth. And I just said, look, if you're right, and if there's no global warming, if you're so right, what are you going to do about ocean acidification? What do you say about that? And he was silent. And that silence speaks volumes. If people over here want to deny clear science about global warming, they cannot deny the fact that the oceans are becoming acidified, that no reputable science anywhere in the world recognizes it as happening, caused by CO2 going into the atmosphere, going into solution acidifying our oceans. So I just say the science is clear. I wish it was otherwise. Life would be easier, but this is a challenge of the ages. Thank you.
Oklahoma Congressman John Sullivan wants an investigation.
In light of the recent disclosure of emails between several prominent climatologists revealing possible deceitful manipulation of important climate data uncovered at the world-leading climate change unit at the University of East Anglia in England, I think it is imperative that we launch an investigation into this issue and re-examine all the scientific evidence surrounding climate change.
Chairman Ed Markey introduces Obama science advisor John Holdren.
Our first witness is Dr. John Holdren. He serves as assistant to President Obama for science and technology. He is the director of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy and co-chair of the President's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology. He was a professor at Harvard. He was the director of the independent nonprofit Woods Hole Research Center. He is a member of the National Academy of Sciences. He has received the MacArthur Foundation Prize, the Genius Award. We welcome you, sir, before our committee. Whenever you are ready, please begin.
Most of the action comes later in the Q&A, but here is a clip from John Holdren's testimony.
There is and there will remain after the dust settles in this current controversy a very strong scientific consensus on the key characteristics of the problem. Global climate is changing in highly unusual ways compared to long-experienced and expected natural variations. The unusual changes match what theory and models tell us would be expected to result from the very changes in the atmosphere that we know have been caused by human activities, above all burning fossil fuels and tropical deforestation. Significant impacts on human well-being from these changes in climate are already being experienced, and continuing with business as usual in the fossil fuel burning and tropical deforestation activities that are the largest contributors to these changes in the atmosphere is highly likely to lead to growth of the impacts to substantially unmanageable levels.
Chairman Ed Markey introduces NOAA Director Jane Lubchenco.
Our second witness is Dr. Jane Lubchenco. Dr. Lubchenco is the Undersecretary of Commerce for Oceans and Atmosphere and the Administrator of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. She has been a distinguished scholar on these issues. She is one of the most highly cited ecologists in the world, a member of the National Academy of Sciences, and similarly a recipient of the MacArthur Fellowship, as was Dr. Holdren. We welcome you, Dr. Lubchenco. Whenever you are ready, please begin.
Lubchenco on human responsibility for climate change.
Since the IPCC process began in the late 1980s, a wealth of global scientific information has cumulatively provided stronger and stronger evidence that the Earth is warming and that humans are primarily responsible. As stated in the Global Change Impacts 2009 report, global warming is unequivocal and is primarily human-induced. This warming can be seen in increases in global average surface air and ocean temperatures, widespread melting of snow and ice, rising sea levels, and changes in many other climate-related variables and impacts. Most of the observed increases in global temperatures since the mid-20th century are due primarily to human-induced increases in concentrations of heat-trapping greenhouse gases. When I served on the very first National Academy of Sciences study on policy implications of global warming in the 1980s, we talked about what human-induced climate change might look like at some point in the future. Today, we know that it's happening now. We are already seeing the effects of climate change on our landscapes, our neighborhoods, our farms, as well as our forests, oceans, and mountains. We are able to measure these changes through significant advances in our observing systems over the last 20 to 30 years, many of which are the result of NOAA's responsibility and innovation, and through collaborative global and national efforts to provide systematic and widespread monitoring of the climate system and associated environmental and social changes. As a result, we have a much better understanding of present and expected impacts of climate change. Widespread climate change impacts are occurring now and are expected to increase. I emphasize that climate change is not a theory. It is a documented set of observations about the world. A key element of the U.S. Global Change Research Program emphasizes the importance of multiple independent analyses and data sets to quantify uncertainties. And therefore, we have the benefit of this policy when it comes to global change analyses. The NOAA data used in the IPCC report are open and available, openly available. They are used heavily in the IPCC results of temperature change, similar to other major global data sets maintained by other U.S. agencies, such as NASA, and that maintained by other countries such as the United Kingdom. So what are these data sets? What do these observations tell us about climate change? What do we know with certainty about trends to date, and what do we think is highly likely in the future? Global average sea surface temperature has risen by 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit since 1900 and is projected to rise another 2 to 11.5 degrees by 2100. The current atmospheric carbon dioxide concentration is estimated at around 385 parts per million, which is higher than the highest point in the last 800,000 years. Temperatures in the next couple of decades will be primarily determined by past emissions of greenhouse gases, but increases thereafter will be primarily determined by future emissions. Current observed global emissions of carbon dioxide emissions are beginning to exceed even the upper range of the 2007 IPCC scenarios. There is strong agreement and much evidence that with current climate change mitigation policies and related sustainable development practices, global greenhouse gas emissions will continue to grow over the next few decades. As we continue to learn more about the climate system, I would like to reiterate the importance of looking at the Earth system holistically and understanding the interconnected nature of the ocean, atmosphere, and terrestrial systems. In particular, I want to emphasize the importance of continuing our work to better understand the oceans and the potential impacts of climate change on them. I believe we've been championing the notion that we do not have but urgently need a strong focus on ecosystem-based science to inform decisions about adapting to climate change. An ecosystem-based approach also provides a broad array of possible tools for adaptation to climate change. climate change interacts with and exacerbates other changes ranging from overfishing to nutrient pollution to invasive species and habitat destruction. Removing one or several of these stresses is likely to enhance the resilience of the system to other stresses. Equally important is the need to acknowledge that we are likely to see surprises as human actions disrupt many fundamental biogeochemical and ecological processes. The now routine appearance of dead zones, areas of low or no oxygen, on the coasts of Oregon and Washington during the summertime is an example of an unanticipated change with possibly serious consequences. What does managing with the expectation of surprises look like? These are rich areas for future research and management alike. And finally, ocean acidification, which I call the equally evil twin of climate change, provides yet another major threat to coastal and ocean ecosystems. Getting a better handle on rates of change in ocean chemistry and the consequences to marine biota are high priorities. The seemingly persistent hypoxic events off the Pacific Northwest coast and this increasing corrosiveness of the water because of acidity are two examples of potential consequences from increasing CO2 in the atmosphere. In addition, climate change can exacerbate other human-induced stresses to aquatic systems, such as those caused by nutrient loading, invasive species, and overfishing. As water resources are stressed, coastal areas are at increasing risk from sea level rise, inundation, and storm surge. North Atlantic fish populations are shifting north due to warmer oceans, and the threat to human health increases due to heat stress, air quality, and waterborne diseases. We must continue to enhance our scientific capacities, including research, observation, modeling, predictions, projections, and assessments, to ensure that we are providing policy and decision makers, planners, and the public with the best possible science-based information to take on the challenges and opportunities posed by climate change.
That was NOAA's Jane Lubchenco. Here's another clip later in her testimony.
Ocean acidity has increased by 30% since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, just over 200 years ago. This increase is 100 times faster than any change in acidity experienced by marine organisms for at least 20 million years. By the middle of the century, it's expected that coral calcification rates will decline by a third, and at that point, erosion of corals will outpace new growth, making many coral reefs unsustainable. And by the year 2100, vast areas of the ocean, ultimately shown here in red, will have reached levels of acidification where pteropods, corals, and other important marine species will likely be severely compromised. So in conclusion, our understanding of the impacts of ocean acidification is relatively new. Roughly two-thirds of the published research has come to light since 2004, which is why you probably haven't heard a lot about this issue. Thanks to Congress's action in passing the Federal Ocean Acidification Research and Monitoring Act, more attention will be given to this subject, particularly by scientists at NOAA and our partners at the National Science Foundation and in academia. Nonetheless, our fundamental scientific understanding of the basic chemistry of ocean acidification is sound. More CO2 emitted into the atmosphere will increasingly lead to more CO2 being absorbed by oceans. That will make oceans more acidic. And we are now beginning to understand the ocean's very capacity to absorb CO2 from the atmosphere is being degraded by ocean acidification. These mechanisms can only be addressed by decreasing the amount of CO2 that enters the atmosphere. The dramatic impacts that ocean acidification can and will have on marine ecosystems are clear. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Markey and Lubchenco, is there global cooling?
Dr. Lubchenco, there's been a series of stories going around making the rounds that the planet is actually not warming but cooling, and that evidence over the past decade indicates that we're in a cooling period and not in a warming period historically. What would your response to that be?
If you look carefully at the climate records, the warming that has occurred is not gradual. It's jerky. And you get periods of time where there are steep increases and other times where it's relatively flat, other times where there are slight dips. And the key point here, I think, is to really understand global trends. You need to look at long enough periods of time that you get a clear signal. It is quite possible to have a decade in which you see very little change, but if you look at the entire century, you see some remarkable changes.
Wisconsin Republican Jim Sensenbrenner attacks climate science as an international fraud.
Expired. The chair recognizes the gentleman from Wisconsin.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I want to go back to the emails that ended up being placed in the public record. And I don't want to get to whether or not they were legally placed in the public record. The question is whether or not they were accurate. Because if they were accurate, it's profoundly disturbing, and it does end up putting into question all of the science of climate change. Now, the data from the climate research unit at the UEA in England is one of only three major data sets, but they considerably overlap. And they've been used as a basis for the IPCC report as well as the U.S. Global Change Research Program. And that means that these two booklets that were passed out this morning, you know, at best need to have a thorough review in the light of this information that has been disclosed. And at worst, it's junk science, and it is a part of a massive international scientific fraud.
Here is more from Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner.
There's increasing evidence of scientific fascism that's going on, and I think as policymakers who are making decisions about the state of the American economy for the next several generations, that we ought to have accurate science, and it appears there's enough question on whether the science we have is accurate. You know, say that there's an awful lot of scientific McCarthyism, meaning name-calling, going on, because I quote from your email of October 13, 2003, saying, doing this will reveal that Soon and Balayunas are essentially amateurs in the interpretation of historical and paleoclimatology.
Washington State's Jay Inslee asks top American scientists if they are part of a conspiracy.
It is continuing studying to me that people can sit and watch the evidence before their eyes of what the seas are going to look like in a century that might melt pteropods and somehow blow that off and be more interested in emails from London. It's interesting to me. And the only way I've been able to understand it is that some people believe there's a massive global conspiracy that's intent on world domination associated with phonying up information about pteropods and the fact that the Arctic is melting. So I just want to ask you if you're part of that massive international conspiracy. Are either one of you members of the Trilateral Commission, Spectre, or Chaos? I just need an answer.
Congressman Inslee, I am not a member of any of those organizations, and I do not believe that there is a conspiracy. It would be an amazing thing indeed if the academies of science of virtually every country in the world that had one, and if the Earth and Planetary Sciences departments in every major university that had one around the world were all engaged together with the United Nations Environment Program, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and all the other bodies that have reviewed this matter in a conspiracy. That really defies imagination that the great bulk of the scientific community all around the world looking at these matters has come to the same conclusion.
Well, I'll just tell you how I look at this. The National Academy of Sciences has looked at this with in great detail, in great summary, from a wide variety of data sets, not just from the individuals who wrote the emails, but in fact from a wide variety of data sets, including information generated by NASA and NOAA and a whole host of United States agencies. And they concluded that, in fact, both there are changes in the atmospheric climate and that there is increasing acidification, or at least NOAA has, associated with CO2. If that is true, isn't it fair to categorize, as much as we want to get people to use the right language in their emails, that this is a tempest in the teapot coming out of England?
Inslee thinks that reality is actually worse than climate science reports.
I have some concerns about the state of our science that are reflected in the fact that everything that I'm reading suggests that the predictions were not were not sufficiently dire as to what we're experiencing. Now, I am not a scientist, as you are, but it seems to me the evidence that I am seeing coming in, I'm looking at this Copenhagen diagnosis report I made reference to in my opening statement, that the Arctic ice sheets are melting much more fast in the summer than we anticipated, that there's been a 40% greater than average ice sheet melt than predicted in the IPCC report in 2006, that we've seen an increasing rate in sea rise than was expected. And to me, just my lay approach is the evidence seems to be coming in the last 24 months, either on the direst end of the spectrum that was considered or outside of that spectrum.
Congressman Sullivan of Oklahoma condemns the culture of corruption in science today.
Gentlelady's time has expired. The gentleman from Oklahoma, Mr. Sullivan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you both for being here. I was going to ask first about the emails, too. Do you think the scandal and this seems to be a culture of corruption in the scientific community right now on these emails and manipulation of data for a purpose to get their own results? Do you see that as a problem, yes or no?
Congressman, I don't believe that the exchanges that you saw are typical of the broader scientific community.
Science Advisor John Holdren responds.
I would add that I, too, do not believe that these emails are remotely sufficient to demonstrate a culture of corruption in the scientific community. They're emails from a relatively few people involved in a particular controversy that was attended by a good deal of frustration and anger.
John Holdren explains the carbon balance and the human role.
Well, first of all, what you need to understand is the natural flows of carbon dioxide in and out of the atmosphere. Out of the atmosphere by photosynthesis and absorption in the oceans, back into the atmosphere from outgassing from the oceans and by the decomposition or combustion of organic matter, have largely been in balance for a long time. They're currently in the range of something like 7 or 8 times the human input. But the problem is that the natural input and uptake has been in balance, and the human input has driven the system out of balance and is leading to an accumulation of additional carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. This is extremely well understood scientifically. Nobody disputes this particular point in science.
But it's at least 7 or 8 times greater than the man-made cause.
Yes, but it's in balance. It's in and out.
Now Holdren dispels the mythology around the medieval warm period.
The great bulk of scientists who've looked at these questions concluded a long time ago that the medieval warm period was a regional phenomenon and not a global phenomenon. The arguments by Soon and Balayunas to the contrary fared very badly in the scientific community in terms of the rigor and validity of their arguments. And that is the reason that they were often disparaged in discussions of this matter, in particular because they continued to espouse the view that the medieval warming period was a global phenomenon, long after evidence to the contrary became persuasive to everyone else. One of the characteristics one expects of scientists is to change their mind when data and analysis show that they were wrong the first time. I changed my mind about the maximum sea level possible in the 21st century when the analysis and the data changed. And that's what we expect from others. When that doesn't happen, a degree of frustration and anger often materializes because of a concern that people are simply muddying the water by repeating discredited hypotheses.
In fact, Holdren says, we have just experienced the warmest years.
If you look at the actual temperature data, and I have in front of me the NOAA data set for the global average surface temperatures through 2008, what you see is that 9 of the 10 warmest years in the 140-year thermometer record, the period of time since 1880 when we've had enough thermometer measurements around the land and the ocean to meaningfully define a global average surface temperature, 9 of the 10 warmest years in that period occurred since 1998. 1998 itself was the second warmest year in the record. 2005 was the first warmest. all 15 of the warmest years in the 140-year record occurred since 1990. You look at the numbers, you do see a bump, as you see up there on the screen in the far right, where in the last few years there is no discernible upward trend. This is completely consistent with having natural fluctuations, natural ups and downs, superimposed on a long-term warming trend associated with greenhouse gases.
Congressman Jay Inslee makes a passionate defense of American climate scientists.
The chair recognizes the gentleman from Washington State.
Dr. Holdren, you have testified several times, listening to you, that given the extensive review by the National Academy of Science and using information based from NOAA, NASA, and a whole host of other data sets, that there is no reason to revise their fundamental conclusion that humans are contributing to change in climate, and NOAA not to change a fundamental conclusion that the oceans are becoming more acidic. Mr. Sensenbrenner suggested that there's some scientific fascism, and that's a quote. Is there any evidence of fascism in the NASA organization, scientific fascism associated with this?
Again, Obama's science man, Dr. John Holdren, denies any conspiracy.
I'm not even sure exactly what that term would mean, but I'm not aware of any cabals, conspiracies, misbehavior in the characterization and use of data in NASA or NOAA.
Well, I tell you, it's troublesome to me. The people who put the men on the moon, the people who discovered water on the moon, the people who are doing great research, figuring out how the oceans are becoming acidic, some of whom are my constituents, it's disturbing to me that people would come to this chamber and call them fascists. I got to tell you, I got a problem with that. I don't think that's right. These men and women are doing the best they can to provide us data and conclusions to the best of their ability. And they, through their professional work, have reached a very, very strong consensus on these scientific issues, who are working for Uncle Sam. And I think it's wrong to say that about them.
Speaking of science, NOAA Director Jane Lubchenco gave the committee a lesson in acidification of the oceans, complete with a steaming beaker and vinegar. Here she explains ocean acidification on the Pacific coast.
Mr. Congressman, I think the rate of change in ocean acidification has surprised many people. And it is absolutely the case that off the west coast of the United States, where winds blow along the coastline and push the surface waters away from the coast, which pulls up cold, nutrient-rich, low oxygen and lower pH water to the surface, that's where we are seeing some of the greatest increases in acidity happening around the world. And it is of deep concern because those areas, as you well know, are historically very, very rich. Our wonderful productive fisheries off that area are in large part a consequence of this upwelling.
A frustrated Jay Inslee asks if there is any other explanation for this change in ocean pH.
I appreciate that. I want to ask, is there anybody in this room, including the two witnesses and my Republican colleagues and my Democratic colleague, is there anybody in this room who has information to suggest that the oceans are not becoming more acidic? Has anybody got information like that? Anybody? Has anybody got an explanation why the oceans are becoming more acidic other than the fact that there's massive amounts of carbon dioxide going into the atmosphere? Has anybody got an explanation for that? I haven't heard any. And yet people are trying to gin up this controversy because you know why? It's not because they're not intelligent. It's because they're afraid that we can't solve this problem. And I think if we had a little more confidence in ourselves and our ability to solve this problem, we would open our minds to the scientific information that is becoming available to us.
And that concludes our time with the Select Committee on Energy Independence and Global Warming. You heard selections recorded live from a webcast by Alex Smith of Radio EcoShock on December 2, 2009. Download the whole 1 hour and 40-something minutes as an MP3 from the climate page of our audio on-demand menu. And you'll find the quick wrap-up by Chairman Ed Markey there as well and in my blog. That's at ecoshock.org. Now you know what goes on when science meets politics. And good for you for listening.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.